I want to speak with you this morning about the power of evil and the personality of the word. I actually also want to speak with you about the personality of evil and the power of the word. And maybe that's the one that's more of a struggle in our day and age. And here I want to, as you know, we've been studying Father Alexander Schmemann's Of Water and the Spirit, and I wanted to read an excerpt from it to you. It's actually from the section about exorcism. And of course, the gospel reading that we've just heard this morning is an exorcism on the highest order. And so Father Schmemann, as he's going through the liturgy of baptism, begins, as he usually does, at the beginning, with the induction into the catechumenate. And of course, the induction into the catechumenate is basically a series of exorcisms. And Father Schmemann is writing very consciously with a modern audience in mind. And as such, he addresses, I think, something really, really fundamentally important in our understanding of evil. He notes that our usual modern understanding of evil is based on the idea of evil as absence. Yeah, evil is the absence of good. And so our usual approach to dealing with the problem of evil is to educate. We just assume people are naturally good. The problem, the reason that they do bad things is because they don't know any better. So we just need to educate them and you know, fill that absence with knowledge, and then they'll be good. And he notes that there's a problem with this method. And the basic problem is that it doesn't work. We know the good. We know what we should do, what we ought to do. And even the Apostle Paul says, you know, I know what to do. But when I when it comes right down to it, evil is right there with me. And Father Schmemann goes on from this to say that our understanding in the church, evil is not, most emphatically, not a mere absence. It is precisely a presence. The presence of something dark, irrational, and very real. Although the origin of that presence may not be clear and immediately understandable. Thus, hatred is not a simple absence of love. It is the presence of a dark power, which can be extremely active, clever, and even creative. And it is certainly not a result of ignorance. We may know and hate. The more some men knew Christ, saw his light and his goodness, the more they hated him. This experience of evil as irrational power, as something which truly takes possession of us and directs our acts, has always been the experience of the church, and the experience also of all who try, be it only a little, to better themselves, to oppose nature in themselves, to ascend to a more spiritual life. Our first affirmation, then, is that there exists a demonic reality. Evil as a dark power, as presence, and not only absence. But we may go further. For just as there can be no love outside the lover, in other words, a person that loves, there can be no hatred outside the hater, in other words, a person that hates. And if the ultimate mystery of goodness lies in the person, the ultimate mystery of evil must also be a personal one. He goes on to say how, you know, the church doesn't delve into a whole lot of detail about this evil, but it absolutely affirms that what we are wrestling against is embodied in spiritual, personal forces. And we have, in the gospel reading today, an example of exactly that. And so I wanted to take a look with this in mind, with this understanding of the personal nature of evil in mind, and the power of evil, and also with an understanding of the personal nature of the Word and the power of the Word, and to sort of dive into this story and try and understand what it means for us. So Jesus comes to the country of the Gadarenes, and he encounters a demon-possessed man. And the gospel writers, and I say it in plural here because this incident is in all three synoptic gospels, and the church must think that this is a pretty important story because it's one of the few ones that's in all three of the gospels, which is in our lectionary arranged so that it falls every time on a Sunday. So he comes and the gospel writers say that this man had been constrained. People had tried to put chains on him, they'd tried to bind him, they'd tried everything they could to control him, but he just broke the chains. And the demons that were in him drove him out into deserted places, and so Jesus found him amongst the tombs. And as soon as Jesus comes to his presence, he cries out, "What have I to do with you, Son of the Most High? Have you come here to torment me before the time?" And Jesus speaks to the man. And he asks him his name. And he says, well, first of all, note what he doesn't say. He doesn't give an ordinary name. It's obviously not the name that he was given at birth. You know, his name might have been John, or it might have been Thomas, or it might have been whatever. But he doesn't give that name. Instead, he says, "I am Legion, for we are many." Here, I want to pause for a moment to think about the power and the personality of evil here. Because evil offers us power. Evil offers us pleasure. And this man had power beyond what anybody else had. Just able to break chains. And yet, that power, just as when we take the devil up on his offer of pleasure, corrupts and destroys our own personality. This man is no longer able to say or to give his own name. His identity has been lost, has been shattered, has been subsumed in this massive, oppressive power of evil. And that's what evil does. It promises us stuff. What we want. Here's your desires. Go after them. Follow them. Follow your heart. And it's not all bad stuff either. You know, power can be used for good. Pleasure is something created by God. And yet, as we take it up on the basis of not of goodness and holiness and self-control and all of the stuff that makes us truly human, but as we take that up on the terms offered to us by evil, it won't hurt the other people that much. It's not really that bad. It's actually just, you know, if nobody finds out, it'll be okay. It eats away at our very souls, destroying our identity, destroying our humanity, taking away our very name. And yet, of course, that's only the beginning of the story. Because the demons are now in the presence of someone that they know, they realize, is way more powerful than they. And so they're begging and pleading with Jesus. Don't send us away. Don't cast us into the abyss. How about those swine over there, those pigs feeding on the hillside? Couldn't you just like send us off into the swine instead? And it's interesting, I won't go into what my thoughts on it here, but in Luke's gospel and Mark's gospel, it says Jesus permitted them to go. I rather like, particularly in the context of what we're talking about this morning, Matthew's gospel here, where he says one simple word of command, go. And they go into the herd of swine, and the swine, perhaps being more rational about the irrationality that was trying to possess them than the human beings were, run down, try and escape it, and run down into the water and are all drowned. Now word gets out. The swineherds, for example, go off to the city, and they tell the people about this, and people come running and they come flocking in to see what's happened. And they come and they see this man who had been totally destroyed by the demons. His humanity was completely obliterated, such that he was going about naked. They see him clothed and in his right mind, sitting at Jesus' feet. And it says, they were afraid. Strange. They were afraid. Here, this was something that they were trying to control. They were trying to shackle him and trying to do something about this problem of evil. Their solutions were all totally ineffectual. But they weren't so afraid of this man when he was possessed as they were now, seeing him clothed and in his right mind at Jesus' feet. It says perhaps something about how used we are to the presence of evil in our midst. We're comfortable with it. It's our familiar environment. And we're, it's not totally in control. It's kind of chaotic. It's kind of destroying things. But, we get it. Here, they were coming face to face with a reality they had never encountered before. The power of goodness, the power of the word. And they were scared out of their wits. And so, speaking out of this fear, they ask Jesus to leave. And it's interesting and I think informative to think about Jesus' response here. When Jesus talks to the demons, he has no qualms about ignoring their petitions. Go away, leave us alone. No, he's not going to go away. He's not going to leave them alone. This man is speaking under the influence of the demonic powers. Again, he doesn't listen. He doesn't respect this, because this evil needs to be dealt with, and it is evil. But here, these people, they're asking him to leave. And it's not for any particularly good reason. They're just, as they say, scared out of their wits. And he listens. And he respects that. And that's something that is key to the difference between evil and good. Evil is coercive. Evil takes and does not give back. Good gives freedom. The word of truth that is proclaimed to us is that which is freely given to us. It is our job to freely receive it. It is not God's way in his goodness to take away that gift of free choice that he has given to us, even when we are using it in ways that are potentially harmful, potentially destructive. He respects their request. I think given the personal nature of the struggle that we're engaged in, thinking about that we are in this struggle with two personalities, the personal nature of evil, the personal nature of good. I think this is what informs so much of the language surrounding how it is that we are embarking on this spiritual struggle. It's described in terms of warfare. It's described in terms of loyalty. Because we can't simply deal with this, as we said in the beginning, on an educational basis. Even the statement of the truth is not in and of itself enough. What matters is where that truth comes from. Who is speaking that truth? You may hear something that is completely true, and if you have a relationship with that person who is speaking it that is such that you don't trust them, it won't have the same power as when somebody whom you know and you love and you trust speaks a word of truth to you and it shakes your whole being to its very foundations. And so it is all that is given to us in the struggle is given to us in a personal way. We engage in the struggle in large part through prayer, through talking to and being in the presence of the one whom we know and trust. We read the scriptures in the context of prayer, in the context of this relationship with the one who has written them and given them to us. And we understand that he speaks to us through his word. And so the struggle that we are engaged in engages our loyalties. And so it was with this man. He owed Jesus everything. His life, his sanity, his ability simply just to sit and listen at his feet. And that's what he did. And he wanted to be with him. He wanted to be with him always, everywhere, at all times. But Jesus has a job for him. He says, and he doesn't say all of this, but I think perhaps implied in it is this, that they have rejected me, but this is your home. Stay. Speak with the people about what you have experienced, about what you know now. Speak the truth to them. And this also is our job. We are called by Christ to stay, to be here, and to be here as witnesses to the power of God at work in us. And as we do so, we proclaim our loyalty to the one who loved us, who spoke the truth to us, and who sets us free as we turn to him. And in that expression of loyalty and that expression of love, we have the foundation of the kingdom of God that is being manifested in us and in our midst, that is being built up amongst us and by us and in us. And this kingdom is that which Christ came to proclaim with power, because we are his army. We are his people. And this is our struggle, our fight, and we will win. He will win, because he who has begun this good work in us will bring it to completion. And this freely willed, freely received truth is what sets us free and is what will set the whole world free. To the glory of God the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, now and ever and into ages of ages.